was an Englishman, I wrote various different possible openings for this morning's sermon. One in the event of England winning yesterday, one in the event of England losing yesterday, one in the event of the match going to penalties, one in the event of the match being cancelled for COVID-related reasons, one in the event of the match being cancelled for reasons completely unrelated to COVID, and one in the event of the match going ahead, but me not really caring much about football. That's the one I've decided to go with today. And over the next few days, as the various analysis and discussion about strategies and tactics continue, and how the England team can have the best hope of success in their next match, I want us to think about a different kind of success today. Not a football victory, but a military victory, the one that we found in Exodus chapter 17. This victory where the Israelites win this overwhelming victory against Amalek, who come and attack them. I want us to think about what the secret is of their success and what we can learn from that today. And this passage in Exodus 17 gives us two different perspectives on the same battle, two different sides of the story, two parts of a lesson that I think we can learn from today. And we need both of these parts of the story, starting with this side of it. One important thing for us to learn from this account today: only the Lord can bring victory. Start there with that quite important thing that the Israelites needed to learn. Only the Lord can bring victory. Look again at the narrative, if you've still got it open in front of you. There are lots of things that are missing in the story of the battle, things that you might expect if you were reading some kind of military history about World War II or whatever. You'd expect things like how many people were fighting on each side, and how many casualties there were, and how many fatalities they were, and what weapons were used, and what was the strategy that each side had, and who won the Euros that year. All these questions that we would expect to find, but none of them are there. All we're really told about the fighting is that Amalek started it, that they were the ones who came and attacked Israel, and we find through the Bible that they end up being opponents of God and his people. And the other thing we're told is that Joshua chose some men and fought, and that they won. That's all we're told about the actual fighting. Instead, the focus of most of these verses is on weapons and warfare in that sense. Most of the focus is on some guy on a hill with his hands in the air. Moses on the top of the hill holding up his hands. Now, of course, Moses isn't really just some guy. Moses is quite a significant person. If you've been following us through Exodus, you've probably noticed his name mentioned before. He was the one who was chosen by the Lord to lead his people out of Egypt. And his hands aren't just any hands. In fact, he's holding something significant in his hand. We're told in verse 9 that he has the staff of God in his hand. That's important. This is a staff that Moses struck the Nile with as part of the judgments that fell on Egypt when they were still oppressing Israel in slavery. This is a staff that Moses held up, and the waters of the Red Sea were parted, and God's people could go through safely on dry ground, but their enemies were drowned. This is the staff that Moses struck the rock with, and water came out to provide for God's people. So they had the water that they needed, that they could survive in the wilderness. It's not just any hand, not just any staff. This is a staff that represents the power of God, the power of the Lord at work for the good of his people and for the glory of his name. They see the staff being used for that reason in the past, and now they see it again, this staff that represents the power of God. And when this staff is up in Moses' hand in the air, then Israel start to make advances in the battle. And when the hand is lowered, they have to retreat. And Amalek starts to become more successful in the battle. It's basically just a very powerful visual lesson, isn't it, to teach them something very important that they'll need in their wanderings through the wilderness as they continue to face hostile situations and other people who are hostile to them and to their God. Where will their victory ultimately come from? From Joshua? From the people fighting? From their strategies? From their tactics? From their weapons? Ultimately, their victory will come from the Lord, shown so clearly by that staff being lifted up and Israel ending up victorious in this battle. And there's something else that we see as well. And if for a moment you could put your hands up in the air, like Moses did, and I'll see how long you can keep them up before you get tired. Because what happens in verse 12, you actually are keeping them up. That's quite amusing. You don't have to keep them up, unless you're at home, in which case you can do. But we see in verse 12, he's got his hands in there, and his hands got tired. Of course, you'd get tired doing that for too long. I don't know how long you can keep doing it for. You can try that later. We could maybe have a competition, send in your times later. But he got tired. And so they set up this system where Aaron and Hur can hold up his hands. But although Moses got weary, the Lord didn't get weary. The Lord wasn't in a situation where he was thinking, oh, this battle's going on for a long time, I'm getting a bit tired out by this. No, the Lord continued to work and led his people through to victory. And the end result in verse 13 is that Joshua, leading the Israelites on the ground, overwhelmed Amalek. Not just a little victory, overwhelmed Amalek and his people. And in the next few verses, as the Lord speaks about these people, the Amalekites, who would become ongoing enemies of his people and of him, and the Lord speaks of it as being his battle, not so much Israel against Amalek, but the Lord against Amalek. Verse 16, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Their victory here is ultimately the Lord's victory. And ultimately, only the Lord can bring them victory. It's a lesson they would need as they continue journeying through the wilderness. Now, based on what we've seen so far in this series, if you've been with us, do you think Israel were quick to learn this lesson? Or do you think they were quick to forget it? As we see later in Numbers chapter 14, Moses speaks to the people at the end of the chapter, and he says to them, do not go up, for the Lord is not among you, lest you be struck down before your enemies. For there the Amalekites, them again of Amalek, and the Canaanites are facing you, and shall fall by the sword. That Moses tells the people that they shouldn't go up, the Lord won't be with them, the Lord won't bring them victory, they shouldn't go. What do you think they did? They went. They presumed to go up to the heights of the hill country. And what do you think happened? Do you think they won? Or do you think they were defeated? Yes, verse 45. The Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down and defeated them and pursued them. Here they learn the hard way, the same truth, that only the Lord can bring them victory. They needed to look to him for their ultimate victory. and their victory would be the Lord's victory. They needed to keep returning to that truth again and again through their history, not just in the wilderness, not just under Moses, but under kings who would come later. And the truth of what they needed to learn, I think, is summed up quite well by something that Jehoshaphat said in 2 Chronicles 20, you can read it later, when he says to the people, "Do not be dismayed at this great horde, for the battle is not yours, but God's." Again, one of the Proverbs, I won't tell you where it is, you can read through the book of Proverbs later and find it. And again, that's another competition, you can send me your answer later. But the proverb says, "The horse is made ready for the day of battle, but the victory belongs to the Lord." The horse is made ready for the day of battle, but the victory belongs to the Lord. What they needed to learn, well, one part of the lesson, we'll get to the other part in a moment, but one part of the lesson, only the Lord can bring them victory. And all of us need to keep remembering and learning the same kind of lesson. All of us ultimately depend on the Lord for any success. Not just when you're out fighting the Amalekites, which you probably don't do that often, and not even just in church and stuff, whatever success that would look like, but just generally in life, we ultimately depend on the Lord for any kind of favourable outcome for us, whether it's in our exams, or in our work situations, or in our parenting, or in our service in the community, or whatever we're talking about. Ultimately, we depend on the Lord for success. And I think all of us have probably found the last year quite humbling in that sense, because we've realised how little control we have over things. That before, we could have convinced ourselves that we controlled quite a few things in our lives and we could make things work together in a certain way to get the outcome we wanted. But if we had that kind of idea, the last year and a bit has surely kind of demolished it. But there's so little we have control over that a virus can come and undermine it all within 24 hours. And in fact, we have even less control than we might conclude at the end of COVID-19. If we realise how much we depend on the Lord in everything, that even the breath that I have now to speak to you this morning is from the Lord. Everything from the Lord. And if you're joining at home and you've still got your hands in the air, the only way you can still have your hands in the air is because of the Lord. We ultimately depend on Him in everything. And like the Israelites, we could be slow to learn that lesson and we could be quick to forget it, because over human history, we've become experts at taking credit from the Lord and giving it to ourselves. And of putting our confidence in ourselves and our own abilities rather than in the Lord who made us and who sustains us and keeps us. To put our confidence in ourselves without any kind of reference to God. Taking credit from Him and giving it to ourselves. Which isn't how we're meant to live. It's not how we were created to live. It's not how this world is designed, that we were created to be people who ultimately depend on the Lord in everything. But that's not how we have lived. Instead, we've wanted to look to ourselves instead of God. And the Bible has a name for everything that flows from that wrong attitude, where we don't trust the Lord in all things. The Bible's word is sin. And our sin is a very serious issue. It's not just a small issue. If we continue in that attitude of sin, then the future that we're building for ourselves is a very dark one. One that ends ultimately in death. and not just physical death that we all experience, but endless spiritual death, punished by God for our sin and our rejection of Him, what we deserve. The Bible humbles us by showing us what we're really like, and then humbles us again by showing us that there is a way out of this darkness, that there is a way out of this trap of sin and death. There is a way out, but it's not about us. It's not about what we can achieve. It's about the Lord and what the Lord has done for us. The Bible shows us Jesus. Jesus who brings this overwhelming victory over all of the darkness of this world, even over death. This Jesus who wins this victory that we can share in today. Jesus who is God the Son, come down from heaven to earth, living in this world, but living in perfect dependence on his Father in heaven, then dying on the cross, dying for our sin, dying the death that we deserve to die, dying in our place so that we can be forgiven, for that burden of sin to be lifted from us, dying so we can be brought into a right relationship with the God who made us. A relationship where we can learn what it looks like, bit by bit, to depend on God in our lives. Jesus died for us and rose again. It's at the end of our story of our lives. It doesn't need to end ultimately in death, but in life. Endless life. Endless life, free from all of the darkness of this world now, free from our sin, free from death, free from all of the pain and suffering and sadness of this world, life forever. That's what Jesus has come to bring us, and it's something that we receive from him as a gift, not something that we work to try and get, but something we receive from him. And if you're joining the service this morning, whether here in the building or online, and you think that the way to make yourself acceptable to God is by doing lots of stuff, perhaps joining the church services and doing X, Y, and Z during the week, today is the day to realise that that's not the answer. The answer is to come to Jesus, to trust him, to receive this life from him, to recognise that he is the only answer to the darkness of this world and the darkness of our own hearts, to come and trust in him. And if you want to know more about what that would look like for you, or you want to know more about who this Jesus is, then please speak to me afterwards or send me a message, my contact details on the screen. This ultimately comes from the Lord. Something we need to keep learning. That first part of the lesson, that only the Lord can bring victory. But there's another part of the lesson, because you may notice that in this passage, Israel are still fighting. But they do still get some people together, and they go out and fight. Although only the Lord can bring victory, he still has work for them to do. They needed to realise that as well. Only the Lord can bring victory, but he still has work for them to do. What we get here in Exodus 17 is different from what we've had previously in the first few bits of Exodus. If you were with us last year when we did the first 15 chapters of Exodus, we had quite a different picture of things. In fact, there's a bit in Exodus 14 where they're by the Red Sea, and we read these words: "The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be silent." At that point, they weren't going out to fight or to go into battle. They just had to be silent, and the Lord would fight for them. It's what we saw with all of the plagues that were brought on Egypt. Israel just sat back and watched him bring judgment and bring rescue for them. But here, the Lord is preparing them for how they're going to be active participants in his work. Not just spectators sitting back and watching him work, but they're going to be active, that there's work for them to do. Their victory only ever belongs to the Lord, but the horse still needs to be made ready for battle. There's still a battle, even if they're dependent on the Lord in all of it. It's not that the Lord couldn't defeat the Amalekites, and so he's looking around for some people that he could recruit who could fight a battle for him. It's not that here it's kind of 50-50, the Lord gets half the credit and the people the other half. They're completely dependent on him. The victory comes from him, but he brings about the victory through their work, through their energy, through their fighting. And the name that Moses calls the altar in verse 15, "The Lord is my banner." It's the Lord who brings victory. The Lord who is lifted up is the one who brings victory. But the people are still busy fighting under that banner. But in this mission of making known the Lord, who they knew, in the work that he had prepared for them, they wouldn't just be passive spectators, but active participants. All of their victory, all of their success would come from the Lord, but the Lord still had work for them to do. Which again is something that we need to keep remembering in our lives as well. But as the Lord brings us to new life in Jesus and brings us to be part of his people, he has work for us to do. He graciously gives us work to do. He involves us in his work in this world. And what that will look like will be different for each one of us. We may have work in our families as we seek to be parents and grandparents who raise our children, the next generation, in a Christ-honouring way. Some of us have work in a workplace where there's paid employees or as volunteers. But in our work, we would work in a way that brings honour to Christ. We have work in our communities as we seek to be a light in this world that's filled with darkness. And we have work together as a church as well, as we join together in the mission that God has given to us as his people. And all of that work is valuable, precious work. We're dependent on him. In all of it, we're dependent on him for the outcome of any of our work. If we're seeking to do good, we're dependent on him for the outcome of that work. But that dependence doesn't lead us to sit back. It leads us to keep working. And there's mystery there about how it all fits together. We don't fully understand Exodus 17, what exactly is going on with the fighting and the staff and everything. There's mystery. We don't need to understand it. We can just rejoice that it's true, that only the Lord can bring victory, but he still has work for us to do. And we can think specifically about the mission that we have as a church, whether we're thinking about Lichard Mission or Calvary Longmore Vale or any other church that you might be part of if you're joining our service. That in this world, we're on a journey through the wilderness of this world as a church. And we have a mission that the Apostle Peter describes as proclaiming the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvellous light. So declaring the greatness of God who rescued us and made us his own. And that's work that we're involved in as we speak about Jesus, as we pray, as we serve, as we give of our time and resources, as we encourage others, as we work in all kinds of ways, little ways and big ways. We have this work to do. And this work, the Bible tells us, is a kind of warfare. Not a physical warfare like we get here in Exodus 17. That's not the kind of war that we're called to. There have been points in the past in the church's history where people have thought that's the kind of war we're called to, and that has been a very wrong thing to be involved in. But we are involved in a spiritual war as a church. Because as we declare the greatness of a God who's called us out of darkness into light, the darkness doesn't like that. The darkness doesn't like that declaration of light. The Bible tells us about cosmic powers and spiritual forces of evil that are at work in this world, that oppose God and his people. Powers at work to disrupt our work, to oppose us, to discourage us, to try to lead us astray, to tempt us, to distort our view of God. These forces that are at work. And so just as we have two scenes of the battle here in Exodus 17, where we have two sides of the mission that we're involved in as a church, two scenes of this mission, we have the scene here on the ground where we hear Jesus' call to go and make disciples of all nations, to declare the greatness of God. And we get involved in that in lots of different ways. And sometimes that's hard work, and sometimes it brings tears. And we're aware of the opposition that comes from Satan and his forces, and the temptations that we face, and the discouragements, and it can be hard, messy work. And there's another scene as well, not just the one where we're here on the ground. We can look up to heaven and remember Jesus. Jesus risen victorious over death, risen victorious over every ruler and authority. Jesus, who's risen victorious and says, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. We look up and see Jesus leading us safely to eternal victory and working through our work to achieve what he wants to achieve. And to make it even more specific, we can think for a moment about Messy Church, which is coming up 25th of July, 3 p.m. And we've been doing Messy Church for a few years, and it's been a good thing for us to be doing as a church. I think it's important for us to remember as we get involved in it that Satan hates Messy Church. Satan hates Messy Church. You think, how could anyone hate Messy Church? Look, it's so colourful, and there's crafts, and children can get involved, and families together, and there's a talk, and there are games and things. Well, Satan hates generally children enjoying life, because Satan is the one who is a murderer who leads people to death. But even more, Satan hates people learning about the God who gives us life and who gives us eternal life. I'm putting it deliberately bluntly that Satan hates Messy Church. And when you think about it like that, you might think, well, if there are these cosmic powers who are opposing Messy Church, well, how can any good possibly come from it? Is there even much point in doing it, us here, just this small church somewhere in South Wales? Well, we could think that. And then we could look up and remember Jesus, risen victorious, lifted up in heaven. He will accomplish what he chooses to for his church. He will accomplish what he chooses to. It may not be what we're planning. It may not be what we would want. But it will lead to that final scene of victory when he comes back. And as we look to him and we remember him there, risen victorious, it's then that we can find confidence here on the ground to keep praying, to keep inviting, to keep filming, to keep video editing, to keep praying, to keep preparing, to keep bonus bag distributing, to keep praying, to keep praying, to keep praying. Not because it depends on us and our work, but because he's given us work to do, and we know that in the Lord our work is not in vain. In everything, we're ultimately dependent on the Lord. This Lord gives us work to do. As we remember his victory, we find confidence to keep working, to keep going. And one day, we'll reach that final scene of victory. When Jesus comes back, all the forces of darkness will be a thing of the past. We'll be together as the Lord's people with him forever. And we'll be able to look back and see how the Lord was with us all along. How the Lord is our banner.